Hello, it's the All in the Mind podcast. Lynne Malcolm with you. Today, the power of music on the mind. The late neurologist Oliver Sacks suggested, it really is a very odd business that all of us, to varying degrees, have music in our heads. We know that music can make us feel good, but can it be more effective than a pill in treating a range of neurological conditions? Can our playlist of favourite songs influence our brain function? A small but growing body of scientific evidence suggests that music and rhythm can connect with the brain and improve it. With an increasingly ageing population, this science offers hope for people with dementia, depression, and other age-related brain disorders. Music could promote a more connected human experience and increase cognitive ability. I explored this topic with a panel of experts at the World Science Festival held in Brisbane recently. And today we bring you some highlights from that discussion. On the panel are Jürgen Gertz, Director of the Clem Jones Centre for Ageing Dementia Research at the Queensland Brain Institute, Gary Thorpe, General Manager of the classical music radio station 4MBS in Brisbane, Jeanette Tamplin, Music Therapist and Dementia Research Fellow at the University of Melbourne, and Amy Baird, Clinical Neuropsychologist and Music and Memory Researcher at Macquarie University.
Okay, so the research I'm just starting up at the moment for my dementia fellowship is looking at the relationship between music and memory in people with dementia, and there's been quite a few case studies of people who are musicians before they get dementia and then are still able to play their musical instrument, and I found that really inspiring and fascinating and wanted to look further into that. So I'm interested in, is music a preserved skill in the face of dementia in terms of playing and remembering music? And also, how does music trigger memories in dementia, and what types of memories? And is music better than another stimulus like a photo or an object at triggering memories? And last year I was emailed by a daughter of a lady with dementia. She's 91 years old and her name's Norma. And her daughter emailed me and said, I hope you can come and meet my mum because it's amazing. She can sing along to new pop songs that come on the radio. And I found that amazing because often you hear that people with dementia sing old songs from their youth. But she was singing along to modern pop songs and remembering them week to week. And so I went to meet Norma and actually taught her to sing a new song.
That's inspiring. So for people with dementia, for example, they can forget how to use a knife and fork, but they can remember the words to songs. How is that?
Well, I think that was a good example of that distinction between explicit and implicit memory. She couldn't remember meeting me or having learnt the song, but she could actually sing the song. So that implicit memory is preserved in dementia. And also we know from recent neuroimaging studies that the parts of the brain that control memory for music, the frontal lobes are involved in that, and those regions of the brain are not really affected in dementia until the very late stages. So the parts of the brain that control that ability, and singing too, the singing network is the frontal lobe, they're relatively preserved.
Jeanette, you're a music therapist in the neurorehabilitation field, and as a music therapist, you're interested in the therapeutic effects of singing and speech and language rehabilitation. Can you share some of your experiences and perhaps go a little bit further into what it is about music that helps memory?
I think one of the key things is its connection to emotion, and it's a connection to the inner person of that's affected by dementia. So when we think of someone with like a late stage dementia, they can become very retreated within themselves, closed down, and there's something about music that taps into the person that has always been there, and that connection with the really deeply long ago encoded memories with music and particular times in their life that make it work really effectively. We use music within a therapeutic relationship to tap into that. It may help them to have a moment where they're connecting and interacting and having some sort of social connection with someone else, and maybe also with their partner or a son or a daughter as well. So we're using music to try and connect them again with reality.
music therapist Jeanette Tamplin. Gary Thorpe is general manager at the Brisbane classical music radio station 4MBS. About a decade ago, he started up Silver Memories, the world's first dedicated 24-hour station programmed to provide therapeutic benefits to people with dementia. It plays nostalgic music of the 1920s through to the 1950s. Gary, you must have had a real gut feeling about this quite some time ago, that you can really tap into people's memories and emotions through music.
Yes, it was about 10 years ago, I think. It was really brought about because our neighbour, Jean, she was in her mid-80s. She had a stroke and ended up in aged care. And after a few months, we could see that she was disengaging, losing interest, and there was nothing there in the home that really interested her. So I got talking to her, and it became obvious that her mind was going back to the time when she was in her teens and courting her husband. She lost her husband in the fall of Singapore, so Second World War music was what reached her. So I thought that would be good to have a whole radio station for people in their 80s, 90s and 100 or more, because frankly there isn't any. So we created it just under 10 years ago, and Silver Memories has been in Brisbane for around about that time, but there was a huge interest following, there was a program on Radio National about it, there was an article in the Courier Mail about it, so it was obvious there was interest beyond Brisbane. So the gut feeling really transformed into a practical way of delivering reminiscence therapy to people in aged care.
Now, the Music and Memory program has just started out in Australia, where they're introducing playlists on iPods to people with dementia in aged care facilities. And I've seen some of those effects of that. So, Jeanette, what do you think about that? What's the potential of that?
I think the potential for it is great, but I think we need to also be aware of the potential for negative effects. I think just to jump in and sort of handing out iPods and headphones to everyone willy-nilly, there's potential for harm. You know, putting earphones on someone is potentially a bit isolating. Using music to help social engagement and connection would be better. But the other thing, I guess, I would be worried that someone might have some headphones put on them, and if some well-meaning person's made a lovely playlist of music from their 20s, but not realising that it's going to trigger traumatic memories of war or someone dying, or and then if they haven't got the cognitive capacity to process that, how do we deal with that? So I guess that's my therapist hat for harm, but I think in general it's a great thing that it's being rolled out in more places.
Music therapist Jeanette Tamplin. Now to a different kind of sound. Professor Jürgen Gertz from the Queensland Brain Institute has been working with ultrasound as a means to cure Alzheimer's disease. Ultrasound has a frequency above the range of human hearing.
To summarize what this ultrasound setup looks like, it's like a stereo setup in principle. So you've got two function generators and an amplifier, and then a piezoelectric element which converts electricity into sound waves. And these sound waves penetrate the skull, and we have been using animal models of Alzheimer's disease. We have been using mice, and we have been moving an ultrasound beam in a zigzag mode over the entire brain of a mouse. But before doing that, we injected what's used as a contrast agent for, again, in a clinical setting, which is completely safe. This contrast agent is circulating, and it's obviously also in all of the cerebral vessels. And when we ultrasound interact with the microbubbles, a microbubble is a bubble which is filled with a gas which is inert and covered with a lipid or a polymer. The microbubble starts to oscillate, and this oscillation exerts some pressure onto the capillaries. The capillaries open transiently, and we get an exchange between the interstitial space of the brain and the bloodstream.
That's opening the blood-brain,
barrier. Exactly. I mean, we all know that the blood-brain barrier is here for a good reason. So it's protecting us from pathogens and bacteria. But we are only opening the blood-brain barrier for a short time, for a few hours. And this allows us to achieve an exchange between the brain space and the blood, and this was sufficient to remove the toxic amyloid from the brains of these Alzheimer mice. Basically what we do is we treat these mice when they are 12 months old. They have a cognitive impairment which is associated with the deposition of amyloid in their brains, something which is modeling what we find in human patients. And we then take out the brains and section the brains and stain them with a dye which allows us to visualize the amyloid. And because it's all about branding, we call this method SUS, for scanning ultrasound. So we hope at some point people will talk about sussing, so I got my brain sussed to remove the amyloid. And incidentally, we are able to remove 50% of this toxic amyloid, and then we then analyze these mice in cognitive tests. We were able to completely restore their memories.
Wow. So how far are you away from moving it from the mouse model to the human model?
In this case, I'm always asking, are you a journalist? Because the journalists tend to ask us this question. I mean, sometimes make the mistake saying it's only 1 or 2 years away. I mean, these things take time, and so we hope that this takes maybe 2 years.
Really? That's amazing.
Until we start clinical trials, not having a cure, starting or recruiting patients. Yeah.
So, if ultrasound can do this, how can we relate this to music?
What we have been using is ultrasound in combination with microbubbles to open the blood-brain barrier. But this is actually a method which goes back 80 years, and it's only now basically rediscovered. And ultrasound on its own, sound waves, have an effect on nerve cells and muscles. So they change the fluidity of a membrane, channels which sit in the membrane alter their functions. So this is called a neuromodulation, and moving from ultrasound to normal sound, so sound has an effect on biological material, including on our nerve cells. Mm.
So, in the bigger picture, what you've found about the power of ultrasound, does that lend weight for you to the power of music?
What we are doing is a bit different, but when you think of neuromodulation, this is an area which is relatively new, and I do believe that sound in itself, not only ultrasound, has a neuromodulatory effect. I don't think that it can restore memories. Even when you look at music, what it does to a human patient, it's known that it has some effect on depression. It certainly has no effect on cognition, but it has a positive effect on emotions, for example. But music will not provide a cure for Alzheimer's disease, but it makes life easier for an Alzheimer's patient. Mm.
And there's, as we were talking before, there's the emotion and the language component that goes along with songs. Mm. Fascinating.
Lynn, I'm just thinking about, the link between some of this, which seems completely removed from what I'm doing, but I'm just thinking one of the connections is the physiological effect that music can have on our bodies, and a lot of that comes back to rhythm. Rhythm has a really amazing unconscious physiological effect on us. I mean, I say that in a lot of the different work that I do in gait rehab with people who've had a stroke or a spinal cord injury, but even coming back to people with dementia, we can use the rhythm and the intensity or lack of intensity in the music to regulate arousal levels. So often people with late stage dementia, agitation is a big issue, so they get really upset.
Physical and verbal.
They're confused, and that can escalate into being very physical and hard to settle. And one of the ways that we work in a music therapy context is to use live music. We use that ISO principle where we match the intensity level of the music with the person's behaviour and then modulate the music to bring them into a more calm.
So you'd start out with a sort of more agitated music.
Yeah.
Rhythm,
but I just think it's an interesting kind of connection with that physiological and the way that our bodies, use that principle of entrainment, which is a physics principle, but where rhythms lock in together and we can use that in a therapeutic way with music.
We've applied that to our programming with Silver Memories. There's the sundown effect where late in the afternoon residents, not all, but many of them, experience agitation towards the end of the day, and they think it's because there's a change in staff or it's getting dark and just something's changing. So in our programming in the afternoon, we program to help the staff calm the residents. So we don't have upbeat music at that time. We just go really calm, take it through, and it does help. It really helps ease them into a change of routine.
And there have actually been recent studies, so there's mood effects, behaviour and agitation, but you said not cognition, but a recent study looked at couples and using music and singing, one person with dementia, one without, and over a period of time they actually did improve on some cognitive tasks, in particular memory tasks. So, I mean, it's early days and it's one study, but they have shown some improved memory function following, in particular, singing activities.
I think the key word is appropriate. It has to also be appropriate music for that person.
So, Gary, what has been the reaction to Silver Memories over the years? What have you seen?
Well, it's been tremendous. We've seen fantastic results. I get letters from people very often. But a couple of years ago, I got a letter from a Brisbane developer. He was very wealthy, but his wife came down with Alzheimer's and all the money in the world. Couldn't help that situation. He gave up his career to look after her as a carer. His next-door neighbour heard about Silver Memories and said, you should get one of these little radios that plays the nostalgia music, special radio station for you. He did that, and I got a letter about 3 or 4 weeks later. And he said, thank you for Silver Memories. My wife previously couldn't even recognise me. Now, after such a short time, I have my wife back and I have my life back.
Wow.
That was very powerful, very powerful. And there was another lady in the Archbishop Duhig Nursing Home at Holland Park. She had lost a spouse who used to be in the home with her. He died. She was there and she stopped talking, stopped communicating. And they went on for about 5 years. And we put a little Silver Memories, these little radios that we broadcast to in Brisbane. Around Australia it's via satellite, but in Brisbane to little dedicated radios. And it was only about 2 days later she started commenting on the music to the staff. The cleaner was in cleaning the room, dusting. They'd used to ignoring her and they'd dust around her because she wouldn't communicate at all. And she spoke up and she said, oh, I know this song. And it frightened the life out of her. And running down the hallway saying, she's speaking. It was quite dramatic. So we've had lots of instances of that. So hence the way we approach it is very careful. You know, we know that we're dealing with people's lives. Literally, their life, how they're going to spend their life. So we put a lot of thought and we do a lot of research about the effect of music and particularly with memory. We ask people to give us requests and things that they remember and we play them in Centurio calls.
So, Amy, what research has been done about the music that people really latch on to?
Respond to? Well, I think that time period that you mentioned, the late teens to the early 20s, it's been shown in with other stimuli that memories from that time are really powerful and easy to bring to mind. And if you think about it, that's the time that our self-identity is really forming in our late teens, early 20s. And it's also a time when we often become quite attached to certain bands or types of music. So that self-identity and memory, there's a strong link between our personal memories and the self. It seems that late teens and early 20s, there is this what's called a reminiscence bump or an increase in memories around that time.
Amy Baird. You're with the All in the Mind podcast, coming to you from the recent World Science Festival in Brisbane. We're discussing the power of music on the mind. Silver Memories is the world's first 24-hour radio station dedicated to providing music for older people and those with dementia. It's the brainchild of Gary Thorpe. And what evidence have you seen that the music from Silver Memories helps to restore speech or improve memory?
Well, in fact, there's two lots of research happening this year. One lot of research is funded by the Federal Department of Health, and the other it will be in conjunction with the University of Queensland, and we've had indication from QUT as well, the School of Nursing. So I'm asking them to research various things. But in the last just under a decade that we've been running Silver Memories, I've had many letters from people basically saying Silver Memories has been invaluable to me. A really strong anecdotal evidence that the music taps into a part of the brain which I think there's a part of the brain that links music with visual images as well. I read that last week.
The thing about music is that it actually activates the whole brain.
Yeah,
so it's one of those unique
stimulus. So even if you have a severe stroke, there's still an area that music can tap into it. It's a very powerful trigger.
I wonder too about whether an extra benefit might come from playing music and producing music. Jeanette, I know you're a musician.
I think there is some preliminary evidence to suggest that playing music or being a musician can give you almost like a neuroprotective effect where you've got more neural interconnectivity or something, that it can stave off cognitive decline or delay the onset. And I think also there's research to show that any type of cognitively challenging stimulus that you're giving your brain is good to do. So for people who are getting older, learning an instrument is a wonderful way to, if they don't play something, I think anything, learning a new language, anything that involves placing demands on yourself cognitively can have a good effect.
Mm. And you've also worked with people with brain injury, helping them to write songs themselves.
Mm-hmm. I guess one of the connecting points, I guess, from a memory, given that we're talking about music and memory today, is that in neurorehabilitation, we often work with patients who've had a stroke or a brain injury and they can't remember things. They can't remember their kids' names, or they can't remember where they are or what's happened to them. So we can write songs with people to help them remember that type of information. And it sort of works on the same principle that you remember advertising jingles and catchy pop tunes and things like that. We use that kind of catchiness about music to help place important information into a song that we can then teach. Mm. So that's kind of one aspect of songwriting, but we've just been working on a whole series of studies looking at people's identity change following a brain injury or a stroke or a spinal injury, and coming to terms with who am I now that I can't walk anymore or that I might not be able to go back to my job, and can tapping into your musical identity and writing songs about who you thought you were before, about how you think you are now, coping, being in rehabilitation, and then thinking about the future. And if that process of going through thinking about all those things and creating a song that you can listen to and then maybe share with others, does that help people integrate the sense of self through that transition process? But yeah, our pilot studies are showing effects that it does help them, and people are finding it a really unexpectedly good experience. We've just been doing some interviews with people who went through the first round of the study last year, and I had a man in who had a spinal cord injury, and he said he would never have thought to talk about the things that we did, but because there was a structure and I was asking him about, tell me about who you thought you were and tell me about yourself and all these different aspects of what makes up who you are, he said he found it an amazingly therapeutic experience and he wouldn't have otherwise gone to talk with someone else about all that. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Mm. So there's very strong anecdotal evidence, and the research is in its early stages, isn't it, really? There's lots of research to be done. I just wonder quickly if we go through and give me your biggest hope around the potential of music to help with dementia patients. So, Amy.
Well, I think your point about identity, if we can, that's what we all hope for as we age, whether we have dementia or not, that we still have some sense of ourselves. And if we can, you know, tap into music's ability to bring people back to themselves and have that self-identity remain as long as possible, that would be fantastic.
Mm. Should Jürgen. I talk about ultrasound or music more generally?
You do what you need to do, Jürgen.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I mean, our goal is, I mean, we have expanded our team. Our goal really is in a few years to have a device which could go into clinical trials. Mm. And our goal is also to develop a treatment which can also be used in rural areas, so which does not need complicated equipment, cartridges can be used like a mobile device. And because we have been opening a blood-brain barrier, another hope is that we will have a device which would lower costs, which are predicted to be quite high, let's say, in Alzheimer's disease and dementia in general. There are ongoing vaccination trials, and assuming that these trials would work out, as to some degree looks like, the estimated cost per patient are $25,000 to $100,000 per year. And this is for a population where we expect to have 1 million cases of dementia patients by 2050. This is most likely not sustainable. So we hope that our device should get there, but also help to lower the costs because one would have to use less therapeutic agents to enter the brain.
Right. Jeanette?
Well, the newest research project that I'm involved in is looking at setting up choirs for people with early to mid-stage dementia, so people who are still living in the community with their carers or with their partners often. So I guess what I'm hoping to do through this research is to find ways that we can support people, support the relationship, that connection and maintaining their identity and the connection in the pair to help them to sustain being able to live at home for longer before having to go into care. That's one of the things that I'm really interested in doing, using music as a way to support that to happen.
Gary?
I think the ancient Greeks knew about the power of music, and here we are in the 21st century and we're still having to put a case, aren't we, really, in many instances for the use of music in these ways. So my hope would be that there is a really solid practical realisation that music is powerful and it can be used in many different ways, and that it's embraced in the aged care industry in particular, where there is a great need. 1 million people with dementia by 2050 is enormous. Mm. And finding non-pharmacological ways of doing it. There is a lot of over-medication that happens in aged care for agitation, etc. So discovering non-pharmacological ways of doing it would be my hope.
Yeah, great point. All right. I think we've done it. Thank you so much. It was such a lovely, stimulating discussion. Thanks to all the panellists and to you, the audience. Thank you again so much. Thank you. And our panellists at the World Science Festival in Brisbane were Gary Thorpe, General Manager of the classical music radio station 4MBS and creator of Silver Memories. Dr. Jeanette Tamplin, music therapist and dementia research fellow at the University of Melbourne. Professor Jürgen Gertz, Foundation Chair of Dementia Research and Director of the Clem Jones Centre for Ageing Dementia Research at the Queensland Brain Institute. And Dr. Amy Baird, Dementia Research Fellow and Clinical Neuropsychologist at Macquarie University. Head to the All in the Mind website for more details about our speakers today. Thanks to producer Diane Dean and sound engineer Judy Rapley. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Bye till next time.